Well, you know Craig Keener, the scholar. Today you're going to meet Craig Keener, the man. You'll also meet his wife, Medine, and their story, Impossible Love.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Okay, I know that it is Thoroughly Jewish Thursday, so we have some guests that are going to be joining me momentarily, but they're not Jewish, and it's not primarily a Jewish subject, but this is the one day we could get them on the air, and I said, boy, to get the two of you together to tell your story, we need to do it, and because they have a heart for Israel and the Jewish people, we are going to make Craig and Medine Keener honorary Jews today. There you go. This is Michael Brown. I'm delighted to be with you. Phone number to call, as always, 866-34-TRUTH. And Joey, let's just do this in this opening segment before I bring Craig and Medine Keener on. So Bernie Sanders, first Jewish presidential candidate to win a primary, and he's won, what, 7 of the last 8 over Hillary. And he is a nominal Jew, meaning he is not a religious Jew or anything like that. Of all candidates to make some of the worst Israel-related statements, leave it to Bernie Sanders to do it. Bernie Sanders, the Jewish candidate. Let's listen to what he had to say. This goes back a couple of weeks, but it ties in with a more recent statement that he made, a transcript from his meeting. Audio from his meeting with the Daily News editorial board earlier this month. Let's go to clip number 12. He's on with CNN's Anderson Cooper, Monday, March 21st.
Overwhelmingly, the United States time and time again has looked aside when Israel has done some bad things. I think, for example, that the growth of settlements in Palestinian territory is not acceptable to me and not conducive to the peace process. I think that the kind of destruction that was wreaked on Gaza during that war was way above what needed to be done for military purposes. A lot of civilians were killed. A lot of hospitals and schools and apartments were destroyed above and beyond what had to be done.
Ah, there you have it. Above and beyond what had to be done. And all these civilian casualties and Israel waging an irresponsible war. Let's listen now. He's speaking with the Daily News editorial board. This is April 1st, but it is not April Fool's. This really happened. Clip 13.
I'm just telling you that I happen to believe. Anybody help me out here, because I don't remember the figures, but my recollection is over 10,000 innocent people were killed in Gaza. Does that sound right?
I think it's probably high, but we can look at that.
I don't have it in my number, but yeah. I think it's over 10,000. My understanding is that a whole lot of apartment houses were leveled. Hospitals, I think, were bombed. So, you know, yeah, I do believe, and I don't think I'm alone in believing, that Israel's force was more indiscriminate than it should have been.
Yeah, aside from the fact that his statistics were completely off. It would be like me saying, I forget how old Bernie Sanders is. I think he's like 406, but I don't have that exactly in front of me. I mean, is that exaggerated? But the fact is that from what we can tell, although all civilian casualties are grievous, for wars that were fought, this had some of the lowest percentage of civilian casualties in recorded modern warfare. That's how carefully the battle was waged. And yet, the Jewish candidate bashing Israel. No surprise, though, to tell you the truth. Another kind of radical left mentality. All right, we come back. We're going to be joined with Craig and Medine Keener. Their amazing new book, Impossible Love, The True Story of an African Civil War, Miracles and Hope Against All Odds. We'll be right back.
fire we please.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Well, some years ago, I was ministering in Tennessee, and I was made an honorary redneck for the day. And then I was ministering in the Bronx. A couple years after that, I was made into an honorary soul brother. So today, on Thoroughly Jewish Thursday on The Line of Fire, we are making Craig and Medine Keener into honorary Jews. Now, Craig and I have been good friends for a number of years now, and I own, I guess, at least 10 or 11 of Professor Keener's books. But this is the first one I read cover to cover, Impossible Love. And in this book, I got to know Craig Keener in a way I've never known him before, and got to meet his wife, Medine, in a way I never knew her before, just knew from a distance. And you say, how come you haven't read Professor Keener's other books cover to cover? Well, because they're only 24 hours in a day, 7 days in a week, 52 weeks in a year, and only so many years in a lifetime. And just the footnotes take you a few years to read through. But this book was, I'm telling you, I couldn't put the book down. Even though I knew there was a happy outcome, I was all through the book, all in tension and suspense. It's an amazing story. Craig and Medine, welcome to The Line of Fire.
Thank you. It's great to be with you, Michael.
What a joy to have the two of you on the air. Let's do this. This book tells your life stories from critical moments, and then as you first got to know each other, and then all the agonizing misconnections and the horrific suffering in Africa where Medine was, and the struggles that Craig went through here in America, and then God working amazingly through all of it. So, Craig, why don't you start where you'd like in the story, and then we'll go back and forth just like you do in the book, the story of Impossible Love. We'll start on your end, Craig.
Thanks, Michael. Actually, the Lord has written a story of his faithfulness in each of our lives, in all of our lives. And so in this case, I guess we were just editing it down to capture a couple of the main threads of that. So it would be an adventure story and a romance story. But then the publisher wanted me to edit it down 45% more so it could be sold very inexpensively, and it is pretty inexpensive on Amazon and ChristianBook.com and so on. But I edited it down, and toward the end of it, I realized, it is a romance story, it's a romance story about Medine and me, but it's a romance story even more about God and his love for us and his faithfulness in the midst of hardship.
Yeah, and it's an incredible story of how God brings strength out of weakness.
Yes.
And that even when we fall short or where circumstances around us take away all hope, God continues to move. Medine,
yeah.
Begin to tell your story from Africa. Tell us where you're from and describe what was happening in your country, some of the turmoil that you lived through.
Well, I'm from Congo. Now, there are two Congos in Africa. We have the big Democratic Republic of Congo that was colonized by Belgium, and then my small Republic of Congo that was colonized by French. So what was happening was a civil war between the South and the North, and we found ourselves in the middle of that war, running for our lives and trusting, depending on God, leaning on God to get through each step and every day. And yeah, that's what was happening at that time in Congo.
And as you and your family suffered, we can't relate to this in America. You live in our country now, and I know that you care about the poor in every country, and there's certainly suffering in America. But yeah. When things got really bad for you and your family in the Congo, how bad was it? Paint a picture for us.
Well, we were always thirsty and hungry. we did not have enough food, so we ate once a day. To give you an example, I remember the day we were pounding some cassava leaves because someone was kind enough to take us to their garden. We call it a field over there. And we got the cassava leaves, brought it at the place we were staying, and we're pounding it. And yike, we saw inside locust legs, and we didn't know what else was in the cassava leaves. We have to make a decision with my sister to know whether we were going to eat it or not. So she was like, what do we do, big sister? I told her, we need to eat. We have children to feed, people who are sick. We have to eat, and we're hungry. So we cooked it. Amazingly, it was really good. Everybody liked it, but we knew what was in there, and we did not like it very much. Just to show that life was hard. We didn't have medicine. We didn't have soap. We didn't have food. I mean, we had nothing. The difference between us, usually the name that is called for people who are refugees in their own country is internally displaced people, IDP, but it's just long. So we call them refugees. The difference between us and the refugees in refugee camps was that we didn't have access to anything. We didn't have access to medicine. We didn't have access to blankets or food. We had to fend for ourselves and depend on God to help us for those who were Christian, who were praying. We were also exposed to stray bullets or people who will come and just rob you or hurt you. That was the life. And we were always on the run, because when we got to a village and it was not safe, we had to go to the next step or the next village. So we basically didn't have shoes. We wore flip-flops. Our feet were basically swollen, tired. To give you a kind of picture of what life was like.
And friends, in the book, the picture is painted even more vividly. And again, this is something that most of us have never lived through. And yet in the midst of it, divine intervention, miracles, prophetic words, supernatural direction. That's the only reason we're telling this story today. Now, Craig, back in the States, you were a married man. You tell the story in your book. You're a married man. Your wife betrayed you. She committed adultery. And yet you forgave. You sought to reconcile. You were taken advantage of. You did what you knew how to do to forgive. But your life was being torn apart. What happened in your own heart during that time, Craig?
You know, before she left, I was praying a couple hours a day. And after she left, you know, the fruit of the Spirit was still left over. For a couple months, I just loved and forgave her and her friend's husband that she was running off with. But eventually... But my heart was so shattered, my faith was so shattered that I wasn't praying 2 hours a day anymore. It was just, all I could do was cry out the name of Jesus over and over again. And then after a couple months, I found myself praying for the guy. You know, the Bible says, pray for those who persecute you. But I wasn't doing it the right way. I was praying that God would kill him. And the Holy Spirit convicted me, and I said, God, that's not fair. I turned down a paying position in a big church to pastor a small congregation that couldn't pay me anything. I turned down a National Merit Scholarship to go to a Bible college where I didn't have a scholarship. I've never so much as kissed another woman except this woman that I married. I mean, I've been faithful to you, and you're telling me, I mean, In the circles I was in at that time, if you were divorced for whatever the reason, you had no ministry. I said, Lord, you're telling me that the man who took all this from me, that the only things that mattered to me, my family, my wife and my ministry, I can't even hate him. And there was like a moment of silence. I'd been so numb it was hard to hear God's voice. But then in that moment,
felt God speak again. And it was like my child. Elijah was a man of like passions as you when he said, God, just let me die. I'm no better than my ancestors. Jeremiah was a man of like passions as you when he said, cursed be the day that I was born. My child, you're a man of God, not because of what you're made out of. You're just dust and ashes. You're a man of God because I called you, and my grace is sufficient for you.
Mm.
And over the next couple years, as I was fighting the divorce, trying to desperately persuade her to come back, God showed me how weak I was, but how great His power is.
I'm going to jump in right here. We'll be right back with Craig and the Dean Keener. You'll be amazed to hear how their lives intersect.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
On this Thoroughly Jewish Thursday, we've got a very special broadcast today. I've made my friends Craig and Medine Keener honorary Jews for the broadcast so we can focus on their book, Impossible Love. I'm going to continue this interview right up until the top of the hour. And we're putting it on a CD for you. And this is now only available through our ministry. You can get the book, Impossible Love, The True Story of an African Civil War, Miracles, and Hope Against All Odds, and the CD of our interview, about 45 minutes long, for just $20 postage paid. You'll also be helping us with our radio ministry and outreach to the Jewish people. So to order, this is by phone only, 1-800-278-9978. Order as many copies as you want. 1-800-278-9978, the book and the CD of the interview. That's 1-800-278-9978. All right, back to Craig and Medine Keener. I referred to both of you as friends, although Medine, this is the first time we've ever spoken. I've heard of you so much through Craig, and then reading the book, not only did I get to know Craig better, but I really got to know you, and can't wait to meet you face-to-face one of these days. That will be a joy. All right. Medine, how did you and Craig first meet? How did your lives intersect? He's a professor in America. You're in Africa, ultimately earning a PhD in France. How did your lives intersect?
Okay. I came to Duke University as an exchange student, and I heard about InterVarsity Christian Fellowship, and I was looking for a place where I can connect with other young people who love the Lord. I have been a part of GBU, which is the other name that we give in the Francophone world about InterVarsity Christian Fellowship. So I went to the meeting that evening, and the person who was speaking was Craig. I remember thinking, wow, he was full of the Spirit, the Holy Spirit, and I could see that he loved the Lord, he was devoted to God, but there was a sense of sadness coming out of him. I didn't know that at that time Craig was struggling with the divorce that was going on. But yeah, that's how I met him. And to tell you the truth, I really liked his eyes.
and he knew the Bible a little bit too, didn't he?
Yes, he did. Yes.
now, Craig, did you notice Medine in that first meeting?
Oh, I definitely noticed Medine. I mean, the one thing in my journal that I wrote down about her was that she was pretty. That was the first time we met. But then also, in the meeting, we had a little disagreement. I don't know if I should go into that, but...
come on, we have to hear it. Just make it quick, but we have to hear it.
The most auspicious beginning, you might say, because... Anyway, each of us would be sharing in the graduate university group about, you know, things, special things that we could contribute from our own areas, and you know, and so I was talking about speaking in tongues, which was a precious experience to me. You know, for people who don't like speaking in tongues, don't blame me; it's not my fault. The first time it happened to me, it was like 2 days after my conversion from atheism. I was just worshiping God, and I just, there was a sense that only God himself could give me worship worthy of him, and it started coming out in another language, and I didn't know that there was a name for that. It's just, you know, figured God knows lots of languages, so I went ahead but it was a very precious experience to me over the years. And Medine had a different kind of experience, a different kind of background, where, you know, some people had tried to force that on her, and so, you know, she kind of reacted against that, and I thought she was against speaking in tongues, and so I thought, well, no, we wouldn't make it together. And anyway, this was like a, you know, after the years, the divorce had already gone through. I was still sad, but yeah.
All right, so you got to know each other a little bit. And by the way, when Nancy and I met, I was 19. My wife Nancy, we were both 19. She somehow ended up at our little church service as a hardcore atheist, completely resistant to God or the gospel. Why she was ever in the building, who knows? But she happened to look up and see me. I was standing in the front of the building, and she said to herself, I would never go with a guy like that. Now, so rather than love at first sight, so that was over 40 blissful years ago. All right, Medine, so how did the two of you connect then? Did you agree to stay in touch or write to each other once you left the country? What was going on between? Did you think there could be a relationship here? Craig has now moved on with his life. As much as he fought the divorce, he had been abandoned and betrayed, the covenant broken, and he was now healing and going on with his life. What was going on from your perspective?
Well, after that initial meeting, actually, on my part, I didn't see it as controversial. I just expressed myself. Craig and I, we gradually became friends, just seeing each other on campus, and we ran. I saw Craig when we will have inter-varsity meetings or things like that. And then when I left for France, we continued to correspond. And I got to know Craig better as we wrote to each other. Occasionally, he will call me. I didn't know he was making a lot of sacrifices by calling me, and I would talk. I talk a lot sometimes. But I really got to know Craig, and I felt like really not only I liked him, but felt like God was in it. So I told Craig about it, which was a lot. Considering that I'm from Congo, it took me a lot of courage to open up and say what was going on inside me to Craig. And I was praying and waiting for him to respond. I guess I will let Craig tell you how he responded.
Yeah, let's do it. We got about a minute and a half. And by the way, we are just beginning to unfold the drama here. I'm telling you. I'm reading the book. I was like, come on, Craig, just do it. Oh, you didn't get the letter. Oh, come on. And if I didn't know there was a happy ending, I would have been pulling my hair out. Amazing book, Impossible Love. But, Craig, a minute or less, what about your side?
Well, I asked her if she was called to ministry because, you know, I figured, okay, after what I'd been through, you know, even then I did try to make sure that I was marrying somebody who I felt it was God's will. I felt, you know, we had the same calling and so on. So I asked her if she was called to ministry. Well, she said no. But meanwhile, she was doing open-air evangelism. She was doing door-to-door evangelism. She was, you know, doing all sorts. She was on the leadership team of a church she helped plant. But she said no, and I thought, well, you know, we wouldn't be compatible. She won't share my commitments to reach the world for Christ. And so I said, well, we better not. Not proceed with this.
And then listen, friends. Craig ends up receiving prophecies that are kind of wild that describe Medine. Medine and her family are supernaturally preserved in the Congo. They can't reach each other. The book Impossible Love. You can get the book and the CD of this complete interview that's going to continue another half hour. $20 postage paid. 1-800-278-9978.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown.
your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back to the Line of Fire. I'm speaking with Craig and Medine Keener. The amazing book, Impossible Love, The True Story of an African Civil War, Miracles and Hope Against All Odds. What struck me, and they're amazing endorsements from scholars, from apologists, from healing evangelists, from wide range. I had the privilege of writing an endorsement. But Dr. R.T. Kendall said this: I was not prepared for how compelling this book is. It has all the ingredients of a spy thriller that will keep you turning the pages. Most of all, it is a testimony of the power, faithfulness, and glory of the living God. Well, Craig and Medine remain friends and now are in active correspondence and even speaking by phone. But somehow, Craig and Medine are not connecting in terms of the relationship that God has for them. And along the way, there is a letter that expresses a lot, that clarifies a lot, that somehow gets overlooked. Craig, why don't you start that part of the story?
That's when Medine said that she was not called to ministry, but actually she went on to explain what she was doing, which I would have considered ministry, like the open-air evangelism and so on. But when I saw where the letter was going, I skipped ahead to the end, and somehow I didn't come back to the middle. I didn't see the middle. And so I said, well, probably the Lord really isn't in this. I mean, I really liked her a lot, but I felt like, okay, it's better to be cautious, and maybe she'll change my mind, but she didn't try to change my mind. She just said, okay, well, maybe the Lord isn't in this.
And in the midst of all this, and I'm not trying to get the chronology perfect here, Medine goes through a hellish experience. She's married to a man who ends up being violent, being involved with other women. It's an absolute horror, ends up abandoning her and her son. And she's going through a living hell, and her country is now being ripped by civil war. Medine, what was your life like? Your family fleeing, your father sick, people that you know dying, houses being ransacked, your own son sometimes at the edge of death with sickness. Mm-hmm. What's going on in your own heart and life, and how did you make it through that period?
Wow, it was a very difficult time. I was talking to someone yesterday, just talking about the fact that there are treasures in dark places. Mm. And sometimes it's only when we come out of there that we see those treasures, and we are grateful to have them. But that was a very dark place for me. I mean, I had all kinds of things going on. I prayed for people to die. I asked God, I said, why? I mean, since I have known you, I have been working with you, and not only I discover that, you know, the man I'm married to has married another wife and has children out and was looking into marrying someone else. In Congo, polygamy is allowed, but he went ahead and said he wanted monogamy, so he did not tell me the truth about that other aspect of his life. So it was hard, but I found myself running for my life, praying for my family. It was very hard. And then something happened. On our run from one village to another, I knew where we were going because I've been there looking for food, trying to find ways where I can make sure my family has something to eat.
All right, stay right there. Stay right there. We'll be right back and find out what happened.
Send it, Lord.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
I'm speaking with Craig and Medine Keener on this Thoroughly Jewish Thursday. We've made them honorary Jews for the day. Their book, incredible love story of God's love for them and how love for one another perseveres. Impossible Love. You can get the book, an exclusive CD of our interview together today, just $20 postage paid. Call 1-800-278-9978. All right, just like the book, a real cliffhanger. At the end of the last segment, Medine, you're in Africa, you're in the Congo, you're literally foraging for food. The roads are deadly. Travel is difficult because of the civil war.
Yeah.
You're going to a village where you previously knew there was food and something important happened. Back to you.
Okay. Yeah. So I was going to that village and I was leading about 20 people because the previous village had become unstable. It was not safe for us to stay there. As I'm walking, I started to think. It was hot. We were sweating. We didn't have water. The kids were asking